Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with the movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry. This show will bring you face to face with experts and speak to them about the past, present, and the future of the trade show and event industry. Through these conversations, we hope to bring you insights that will help you get the most out of your investments in your trade show participations. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to this very first episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Today, we have with us Paul Woodward, chairman of Paul Woodward Advisory, providing advisory services to the B2B media and global events industries.
The exhibition industry has utilized quite effectively the sort of the basic digital services that sit around the outside and make the processes of running their businesses more efficient in a number of different ways. What they have failed to do, partly because they didn't see the need, partly because they were making so much money with their traditional business model, why disrupt it and spend money on things that were going to reduce their profitability? That's kind of been the mindset. What they haven't done is brought that into the heart of the business and really integrated it with the customer experience.
Paul Woodward provides advisory services to the B2B media and global events industries as chairman of Paul Woodward Advisory. Prior to this, he was the managing director of UFI, the Global Association of the Exhibition Industry, from 2010 to 2015. He was responsible for all UFI activities and events, as well as for the operations of its offices in Paris, Hong Kong, and Sharjah. Before taking up the UFI role, Paul was based in Hong Kong for 25 years. In 2000, he founded Business Strategies Group Limited, a business intelligence and strategy consulting firm serving the business media and events industries. BSG established UFI's Asia-Pacific office in 2004, and Paul was also UFI's regional manager in Asia. Paul is now BSG's chairman. Originally a business journalist, Paul worked from 1985 until 2000 for the publishing and exhibitions business, which now operates as Informa Markets Asia. He was a director of that business, responsible for new business development and strategy across the region. Now, on to this insightful episode with Paul Woodward. Paul, welcome to the show. I'm delighted to see you again so quickly. It was such a wonderful time that we spent chatting in London, and it's just a few days back. So it's good to see you again.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Paul, I think you know possibly as much as one could know about the trade show industry than anybody else in the world. I mean, if I have to name five people in the world, you are there. If I have to name the top three in the world, you are there. So it's great that we have this opportunity. From your vantage point, I mean, with the amount of data that you have at your disposal, the number of people you know, the number of organizations you have seen across the world, where do you see the industry is today?
I think it's at a very interesting moment in that we are moving away now from the recovery phase into really a sort of rebuilding of a new industry. You know, we're firmly into the sort of post-pandemic rebirth of the industry, you might say. Obviously, as we all know, the pandemic was a desperately tough time for the exhibitions industry, as so many other industries. And people were not able to travel, they were not able to meet, and all manner of digital alternatives were tried. And there was much discussion within the events industry, within the marketing world, as to whether this meant the end of face-to-face events, the end of exhibitions, trade fairs, conferences, as we have known them, as all of these marvelous digital alternatives came into being. I don't think we need spend too long on that, because the it's one of those rare occasions on which people's opinions have been absolutely proven one way or another by what happened once we were all able to meet and get into to exhibition and conference halls and get onto aeroplanes again, in that there is a very powerful need and desire for people to get together in person for all sorts of reasons. And perhaps we can get a little bit into perhaps what some of those reasons are and what the digital world was not able to replicate. And we saw a strong bounce back as soon as the doors were effectively reopened. Events began to come back pretty strongly. Within 12 to 18 months, most of the exhibition companies in most places in the world were talking about being essentially back to where they had been in 2019, before all of the unpleasantness kicked in. China, it has been a bit of an exception. It sort of rumbled along a bit longer than everybody else with things happening and then stayed closed longer. So really the last major market in the world to come back in a sort of a significant way was China. But even that is really well over 12 months ago now. So we have all of that effectively behind us. The basic question as to whether is there a future for face-to-face events, whether we're talking conferences, whether we're talking trade fairs or sort of hybrid events. Hybrid events is another word which can have multiple different meanings. We might want to come back to that as well. But we've seen them come back by and large very strongly, now being driven once again by all of the normal drivers of events industry activity. So sort of global trade, technical innovation, changing patterns of that, rather thankfully than any sort of restrictions on what we are actually allowed to do. I would say over the last 12 to 18 months in most places in the world, the focus of those working within, I'll talk particularly about exhibitions and trade fairs here, although we can broaden this out into other types of events if you want. Those working, running the exhibitions businesses have really been focused on getting their businesses back, building them back up to where they were before, frankly, refilling the bank accounts, which were rather sort of sorely depleted by and large in most places in the world as a result of what happened. And that, I would say, we're at that phase now. So we are in some ways back to business as usual. But in other ways, obviously, since the end of 2019 to now, we've seen quite substantial changes in the world of digital services and other things. I don't think we should today get into the whole world of AI, although that is as in every other industry, is pressing on the minds of the people in the events industry and wondering just what it's all going to mean to them. But I don't think that's really the main or where we should focus our attention in our discussion today. But because so much effort and time and interest was focused on the digital alternatives to trade fairs and conferences during the pandemic, when we couldn't do business in our normal sorts of ways, to some extent, there has actually been quite a good step forward in the mindset of large parts of the industry as to what does and what does not work in terms of the digital services which they can deploy and enhance the face-to-face events that they've come back to organizing. So we're at a very... So that's a slightly long-winded answer to your sort of kickoff question there as to where are we? And I would say we're at a very interesting juncture now, because having proven that we're back to business, proven that the basic business model works very well, we are now really at a point where I think we have to move on and have a look at really how is the industry going to evolve and develop over the next 5 to 10 years. So that I think is where we are today.
It's very interesting because one of the positive, I would say, fallout was the emergence of hybrid. It does solve a problem of the ability of many more people to join in, at least in the content part of the trade shows and conferences. So that's an interesting development. But I'm not so sure how the AI component, like pretty much like you, how a very physical thing like a trade show or a conference will get impacted by AI as far as the core of the industry is concerned. So there may be a sort of sidebars which will be enabled by AI, but we'll keep it out of today's discussion.
Yeah. Well, I think that's absolutely right. What might be a useful way of thinking about that, and in fact, all of the other digital activities going on around the events world, is really to sort of think about how this has all been deployed over the last sort of 25 years or so, in which one way or another, the emergence of the internet and the sort of the digital world which we know today has transformed every business. And when you look at the way in which events businesses work, they work much more effectively and efficiently today as a result of quite basic digital services that they've been able to use. And what I would mean by that, even at the most rudimentary level, every single event in the world has a website. They deliver their basic message through their website. They, generally speaking, interact with their customers through their websites. Some companies, in a very simple and basic way, where you press a button and send an email to them. Others, in quite sophisticated ways, where you can book exhibition booths, you can choose where you're going to go, you can buy all of your services for the exhibition through a website in ways which are as seamless as booking an airline ticket is these days, for example. But those are rarities, I would say, by and large. But overall, that massively transformed how exhibition companies interact with their customers. I mean, casting minds back sort of long, I've been in the industry a long time. You can see that from the color of my beard. But the when I first started getting involved with exhibitions, after an exhibitor had signed up to become a participant in an event, they would be sent in the mail a great big fat book full of forms that they had to fill in. And if they wanted flowers on their booth, there was one form they had to fill in, literally, and probably in those days, fax it back to somebody. And then another form if they wanted extra chairs on their booth, and another form for everything you could imagine. Incredibly inefficient and clunky, and of course, forms get lost or got sent to the wrong places and did all of those things. So most of that is... So, I mean, I won't labor the point, but basically the point I'm making is that the exhibition industry has utilized quite effectively the sort of the basic digital services that sit around the outside and make the processes of running their businesses more efficient in a number of different ways. What they have failed to do, partly because they didn't see the need, partly because they were making so much money with their traditional business model, why disrupt it and spend money on things that were going to reduce their profitability? That's kind of been the mindset. What they haven't done is brought that into the heart of the business and really integrated it with the customer experience. And I think this is actually a really, when I said earlier, we're at an interesting juncture as to where the business goes. This really is at the heart of it now. Everybody, to some extent, has deployed the basic services on the periphery that make their shows run more efficiently. That's fine. Nothing terribly exciting or interesting in that. Where we've got to at the moment, I mean, to put it crudely, and there are some events and some businesses do it much better than this, but by and large, the experience of participating in trade shows, and to say the conferences business we'll leave aside because it's a different world. Up until the point at which I, as a potential buyer, as a visitor to your event, arrive at the hall, you have a fair amount of information and understanding of what I do. I register online normally. I maybe download my badge one way or another. I show up or do not. So you have that information. Paul Woodward registered for my event. He didn't come. He did come. And I know the days he came, and usually because somebody's scanning your badge at the entrance to the events, I know when he went in and out. The moment I step into the exhibition hall, though, I disappear from your view. There are other ways, and there are some smart badge options now where you can ask people to check in at your booth just by waving a badge with an RFID chip. These technologies exist. Some of them are being used. But by and large, the process from the moment that I walk into the hall, and I may wander around entirely aimlessly, just sort of looking to see what's there with no particular plan in mind, see a few friends, which of course is a part of an important part of the process of coming to trade shows. That's fine, but the organizer and the exhibitors don't really have a clear sense of that. You know, there are much more sophisticated ways of doing this. There are, in the travel industry, for example, an absolute norm is to have hosted buyers where I actually invite you and say, you are an important person in this industry. We'd like you to come. I'm actually going to pay for you to come. And in return for me paying for you to come, you have to do a certain number of preset appointments with our exhibitors. So that's a much more structured way. By and large, people don't want to go entirely in that direction because one of the great appeals of the trade fair, of the exhibition, is the sort of potential for serendipity. So there may well be 10 people that I really want to meet and are important for me to meet. They might be existing suppliers. They may be people I've heard about and I want to just go and see them, sort of put some faces to names and actually have a look at their product, perhaps pick it up, smell it, taste it, whatever the product might be, whatever's suitable. But equally, I may wander around a corner of a row of booths at a trade fair and think, wow, I've never heard of that company or that, but what an interesting idea. And I go and talk to them. And so, you know, it's very hard to pre-plan that. However clever your sort of digital director is and your pre-marketing of the show and everything else is. The way the technologies for that sort of thing tend to work actually mildly precludes the opportunities for serendipity, in the sense that, you know, it's a bit like your ordering of Amazon books. I mean, if you order three types of a particular book from Amazon, Amazon will forever be recommending that type of book.
Exactly.
Not knowing perhaps that you also have a really strong interest in something entirely unrelated to that type of book.
Yes.
So trade fairs are really good at that. And nobody's come anywhere near to dreaming up a digital alternative to saying, here's something completely different that you've never thought of before, because by and large, any attempt to do that digitally is simply going to be irritating, because not only is it that there will be a good reason you've never thought of it before, because you're not interested in it.
Yes.
You don't want to sort of beat out that chance of that sort of activity at trade fairs in favor of super efficiency of the time of the people there. That being said, you do want to make it as effective as possible. So if I come into a very large fair, but I'm only interested in a particular aspect of a business, I obviously want to be able to know where I should go. I don't want to have to wander around 10 halls in a giant German Messe to find the sort of 12 companies that I'm really interested in talking to, one in each of the halls of the fair. You know, there is a pressure on the organizers to make the experience more efficient. Most event organizers will report that over the years, people are spending less time at events. Even if the same number of people come, they're generally spending less time at events these days. If they used to come for 2 days, maybe they come for one. If they used to come for a whole day, they come for half a day. So we need to make sure that experience is as efficient as possible. But equally, there are clearly some really big opportunities. To come back to this point I made earlier about the exhibition hall essentially becoming a black box for the organizers and the exhibitors, once I walk into it, they don't know what I do. I may, as I have done at one or two events myself, sit in a corner of a coffee shop meeting a number of people and never visiting any exhibitors at all.
Right.
Which would be very irritating for the exhibitors, but was perfectly legitimate business activity for me. But there are, so a lot of tools now, or a lot of effort now, focusing on how can we more cleverly and intelligently integrate the information that we have about the buyers who are coming to the event, because everybody collects at least some information. Depends a bit where you are in the world, of course, where how the sort of the data privacy regulations allow you. But anyway, basically, we all know in principle who's coming into the halls. We know quite a lot about our exhibitors. And so we have, exhibition organizers have pretty rich databases of information, which they've only deployed in a very basic way so far. And an awful lot of effort. And the biggest companies in the industry, I would say, have made quite good progress with that, because it gives them opportunities both to integrate the digital services and digital activities with the face-to-face activity at the event. So you begin to sort of close the or throw light into the black box, shall we say, perhaps, in terms of what's actually going on in the hall. It also, of course, gives you opportunities to get into the 365 days interaction with your customers. I mean, one of the challenges for the trade fair business, obviously, is that you only actually are in the same room seeing your customer, providing your customer, your paying customer, which is by and large the exhibitor. You're only seeing them and interacting with them and providing them with the service for 4 or perhaps 5 days a year, if they only come to one of your events. If you're lucky enough to have a suite of events in different places, you may be able to take that exhibitor by the hand and lead them around a variety of events that suit them in different places in the world. And that's one of the rationales for the bigger companies expanding their global footprints.
Right.
If you have one jewelry fair that's really successful, that's fantastic. If you have 20 jewelry fairs and you can go to your biggest exhibitors and say, shall we do a deal for all 20 fairs in 20 different places in the world? One contract, one experience, one set of interactions, one salesperson rather than 20. That's very attractive. But by and large, the basic story is we deal with our paying customers once a year for a few days. And for many, many years, I think I've been going to exhibition industry conferences for 25 or 30 years. And I think for that entire time, there's been some discussion as to how can we extend our relationship with the customers to the whole year, to 365 days a year instead of 5. And those two, that is a much, much more realistic and possible story now than it used to be, because of the tools that are available to us.
So there are two parts to this discussion. A lot of what you just told is focused on the exhibition organizers and what they can do. There is also the exhibitors themselves, who have their own challenges and own technology requirements. Perhaps a similar outcome, in the sense that they also want to stay engaged with their customers. What do you see happening there? What are the exhibitors actually saying? See, we should not make no mistake that all this discussion about intent and first party intent that we talk about in the digital space today was what was the trade fair business all about. Trade fairs were first party intent. If I'm interested in something, I come there and I show my intent, right? So. This was way back. I mean, what we are trying to sort of do with tools like Zoom Info and Sixth Sense and Clearbit and so on and so forth in the digital space is what trade shows already doing in terms of showing intent. In that scenario, what kind of challenges or technology requirements or demands or changes do you see? I know I'm sort of clubbing a lot of things together, but what's your sense of what's happening with the exhibitor side? And then I'll come back. I have a different question related to what you just told.
Well, I think one of the challenges of answering that question, of course, is that under the the very wide umbrella of the phrase exhibitor, you have many different types of company and many different types of reasons for exhibiting. If you were sort of to take two possible extremes in terms of the types of trade fairs to start with, at one extreme, you might say you have something like the classic gift fair, and you see these all over the world, where the exhibitors are primarily small to medium-sized manufacturers, and the buyers are typically either local retailers, if it's a national level show, or if it's an international show, such as the ones maybe that take place in Hong Kong or Guangzhou or a few other places in the world. These may be trading companies who are going themselves to sell on to small retailers in various places. This is a very simple transactional exercise. Your goal in going to the exhibition as a buyer is my customer, either my shop or my customers need 20 new, different, interesting, exciting items that are going to be something different that somebody didn't buy last year, so I've got something new in my shop. And I walk around the trade fair and I say, yeah, I quite like that idea. Send me some samples, very simple interaction. And if I like them and I can sell them, then we'll buy a container load from you.
Yeah.
Very simple transactional business. At the other extreme, shall we say something like an air show? The Dubai Air Show, Farnborough, Singapore Air Show, Paris Air Show, those ones, where you get a mix of commercial and military aviation manufacturers. Nobody really expects the chief executive of an airline to walk up to the Boeing stand, kick a tire on the 787 and say, I'd never thought of this before, but I think I'm going to buy 20 of those. It's just not how it works. These are marketing events. You can sort of wine and dine the generals of the Air Force. You use them as PR opportunities. You get the TV stations to watch the flybys of your latest wonderful aircraft, whatever they are. There's more sort of nitty-gritty trade fair type, regular trade fair activity goes on in the background as you get into parts suppliers and other things. But by and large, nobody shows up at those events expecting to come back with an order book. And at some of the simple gift fairs, they actually do sit on their booth with a little notebook like this that they fill up with. Paul came to my stand and three other people came to my stand and they've asked for this, and that's great. That's very easy to measure in some respects. And if your fair's successful, it's quite easy for an exhibitor to know that they had a good event. Much harder when you're at these where the objectives of being somewhere are much softer marketing, brand building, relationship building goals. Interestingly, though, actually, probably the larger corporate exhibitors at those bigger events, even if their objectives for being there are somewhat softer than filling up a notebook with names of people who've come and asked for samples, probably have a more sophisticated approach to what they're doing. I mean, for obvious reasons, they're spending big money. I mean, if you are one of the larger brands participating at a big fair like an air show or an auto show or something like that, you could be spending upwards of $10 to $20 million to participate in that fair. And even for the biggest companies, that's a lot of money, and they're not going to spend it without thinking very hard and trying to measure as well some of the impact that they're having. And they will deploy quite sophisticated tools and pre- and post-show research and other things to make sure that they've achieved their objectives. If go back to our gift fair, and you're generally dealing on both sides of the equation, both the exhibitor and the visitor side, with what I would say small, medium-sized companies. Now, this is again, a slightly circuitous route to answering your question, but one of the key challenges is that however marvelously well the event organizer organizes their event, a long, long-standing frustration in the events industry is, generally speaking, how relatively poorly most exhibitors actually make use of the opportunity you've given them. you know, as an exhibition organizer doing your job well, you will have spent an awful long time in working and inviting the right people to come to the fair, promoting the event to the industry, trying to make sure that you fill that hall up with all of the right people. And again, putting it at a very basic level, I haven't seen this number updated for a while, but I would be surprised if it's changed dramatically. There's been regular research which suggests that 70 to 80% of exhibiting companies participating in trade shows do not follow up the leads that they receive at trade shows. My own personal experience would suggest that to be true. I think I may have shared this story with you when we met in London, that several years ago, I was interested in buying a boat. And I was genuinely interested in buying a boat. And I went to a boat show and I looked at lots of different lovely boats. And I saw five that were broadly speaking in line with what I was interested in. And I asked each of those five companies to send me information. And of those five companies, I received information from one of them. And I was not a tire kicker. I was somebody who was in the market for buying a boat. And I did eventually at a later stage buy a boat. So, you know, it enormously frustrating this for the organizers of events, because they know that a lot of their exhibitors are not using the event as effectively as they might. And there are a number of consultants out there who make it their business to work with exhibitors at trade fairs to help them more efficient, make them more efficient. It's the ultimate low-hanging fruit in many ways. It's not rocket science. You don't have to do anything super clever. It's just kind of joining the dots between the objectives for going to the show, briefing and training the people who are going to be manning the booth, and then doing something with the information that you collect at the event to follow up and improve your business, all of which are sort of measurable things. But you would be very – well, perhaps you wouldn't, but many perhaps would be surprised as to how poorly that's done. I think in many cases, particularly in small, medium-sized companies, there is a disconnect between the decision-making process to participate at the event, between the marketing people who produce the brochures and the salespeople who are deployed on the booth, and they just don't draw the dots at the end. In many cases, if the exhibiting company is a smaller or medium-sized company, you know, it could well be the CEO, it could well be somebody at a very senior management level who has to make the decision as to whether to go. That decision is very often then thrown over the fence to a more junior team who may or may not particularly want to spend a week in an exhibition hall in February somewhere that's away from home. So they may not be so thrilled that they're now told they have to go. And then, say, surprisingly rarely do people seem to actually properly plan the process of being there. The more thoughtful exhibition organizers have, in my experience, spent quite a bit of time and effort in trying to come up with ways in which they can help with that. There are people run training programs and seminars for exhibitors. But I have to say the digital event tools have really helped with that sort of thing. It was practically very difficult in the past to get, you know, when the only way to deliver training was to get people into a meeting room somewhere and show them PowerPoint slides. And, you know, with the tools that we have available now, it's much easier for organizers to run perhaps a series of webinars, some for new exhibitors, some for a long-standing exhibitor, so they can learn about new features of the show, new tools that they can take advantage of, et cetera, et cetera. So that's all become easier, although, frankly, you again might be surprised about the relatively small number of organizing companies who actually do that. More of them certainly should. I mean, if you look at the satisfaction research done with the experience of trade fairs, it's actually not terribly good. There's a company called Explory that's been doing this for a number of years now. They use the Net Promoter Score concept as a way of sort of tracking how well exhibitions do in terms of meeting people's needs. The answer is really not very well. They're not that popular, and there are a variety of reasons for that. Some of them things where the organizers could and should be doing things better, but frankly, others where the people who were saying, no, this event wasn't very good for me, I'm not sure I'd recommend it, because they didn't do things very well themselves.
Right.
So it's a very old and long-standing frustration, but, you know, again, some of the digital tools that are available may well help at least to bridge the gap between the ideal way of participating in a trade fair and what we actually typically see on the ground at an awful lot of events.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
But absolutely at the heart of what's the asset for the exhibition organizing company is that attendee database. And that is absolutely the ultimate trade secret for those companies as well. My exhibitor database is quite easy for anybody else to find. What I can't immediately find is the list of the 20,000 people or whatever the number may be who walked through the door.
You are listening to a Bizcast audio original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive back into the episode with Paul Woodward. So two quick questions. One is that I think there is a sort of, need of sharing leads that the exhibition organizers sort of guard so protectively, people whom they are bringing in. And also the ability of the participating exhibitors to actually bring in their existing customers, sort of risking that I'm exposing my customers to my competitors and so on. So there is one disconnect there in terms of the ability of exhibitors to seamlessly approach everybody who has actually registered and not necessarily come to their booth. So today, the way it works is I sign up for exhibition thinking that I'm going to have a wide cross-section of my target audience coming in there, which is why I sign up. I'm also inviting my existing customers and partners to come in and talk to me because that's my socializing, marketing, brand reinforcement kind of thing. But I do not get enough access to database. So that's one sort of point of conflict that I have been, as I'm talking to people, I see that emerging multiple times. The other question is, why do people not actually do what they're supposed to do when it comes to exhibitions and trade shows? Why is it that the follow-up is not happening? Why is it that we came there in the first place to talk to customers, but then we sort of identify some folks and then we don't talk to them. These are two completely different questions, but I thought I should place them and see what you see from your perspective.
Yeah, well, the first question that you've asked there about exhibition organizers would call their visitor database, the information on who actually did show up and come to the exhibition. I would say one of the reasons that is not widely shared and made immediately accessible to the whole database is that frankly is the key asset of any exhibition organizing business. They have two assets, arguably three assets, really, that actually, you know, there's a very, as you're probably aware, there's a very active M&A activity among exhibition organizers and private equity companies buying in. So there's clearly a substantial value assigned to exhibition businesses, partly because they tend to generate extremely healthy profit margins. But underlying those profit margins are three assets, really. One is the brand of the events that they organize. If you are the most if you are the Paris Air Show, everybody in the world knows that event. That is the top brand for the industry. So that's asset number one. Asset number two is the dates that they control in key venues. If you are the organizer of a jewelry fair in Hong Kong in September, then the venues in Hong Kong, or the venue that you use, is by normal practice of the industry not allowed to offer any other organizer an event of a similar theme before or after your event. So you control if the jewelry industry is used to coming to Hong Kong every year in September, and you have that dates, you also, by industry practice, have the right of first refusal. It's a quite a valuable tool, because as people who try to market new venues discover, exhibition organizers leave a particular location at their peril. Basically, because much as we all like to think I am Paul Woodward Exhibitions Limited, and everybody absolutely adores Paul Woodward Exhibitions events, the truth of the matter is most people in an industry are used to coming to Hong Kong in September to a jewelry fair, and they may not even know that the exhibition is organized by Paul Woodward Exhibitions. And if next year it's organized by somebody else, as long as it's properly done, they won't really care all that much. They'll still come to Hong Kong in September. So those dates are a critical asset. But absolutely the heart of what's the asset for the exhibition organizing company is that attendee database. And that is absolutely the ultimate trade secret for those companies as well. My exhibitor database is quite easy for anybody else to find. If I'm your competitor, if I want to organize a similar jewelry fair somewhere else, I can go online. Everybody prints that. Everybody publishes, because it's what you need to attract me to come to the fair. Everybody publishes their list of exhibitors. They're very proud of their list of exhibitors. We have the 700 companies in this industry. They'll all be there, and this is who's going to be there. So if I'm a competing organizer, it's very easy for me to find out the 700 companies that I should be targeting and knocking on their door and say, hey, why don't you come to my show instead? It's better than that other one. It has purple instead of a red logo. Isn't it lovely? But what I can't immediately find is the list of the 20,000 people, or whatever the number may be, who walked through the door. So I'm not going to publish that list. I'm not going to make it available. And my basic answer to the exhibitor is going to be, you need to do whatever you need to do at the event to make sure that of those 20,000 people, as many as possible come to your booth and interact with you. And what the exhibition organizer will say, one great way of doing that is take a bigger booth, because then people will notice you. But of course, you have to pay me more money. Now, that being said, quite clearly, you're right. There are, you know, particularly for large trade fairs, you know, it's almost physically impossible for a lot of the visitors to get around all of the booths. And there are companies looking at, they're highly unlikely to give you access to their list, but what they may well do is offer services, pretty typically now digitally deployed in some way or another, which allows you, particularly if you have used some of the technologies which are now often available at the more sophisticated trade shows, where you can quickly gather information on who has come to your booth, whether it's a smart badge, whether it's an old-fashioned barcode reader. I mean, those have been around for 25, 30 years, the barcode readers. You will have good information on who did come to your booth. If let's say whether it's the smart badge technology, whether it's the barcode readers, whatever it is, you should walk away, ideally at the end of every single day that the exhibition's taking place, with a list of the people who came to the booth, drawn from the organizer's database with all of the basic information on those people. The interesting question that you alluded to, of course, there though, really is, what about all those who didn't come to the booth, and how can I attract those? There is a commercial discussion to go on there with the organizers. The second question you asked was the more frustrating one. I mean, how can we encourage the exhibiting companies to be more efficient in the way that they participate in the fairs? And that is tough. We do see organizers who are proactive about this and actually take this as part of the process, they, you know, if they want to improve the satisfaction of the companies that participate, then they need to do something about this. So they need to offer services, they need to offer support, they need to offer assistance to their exhibiting companies. Why does it happen? I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think there is just a disconnect with the processes within the organizations that exhibit, between the marketing and sales teams and between the senior management, who are often the people who make the decision to go. Relatively, you know, it's a relatively small number of large corporations that really have a dedicated event marketing team. Some do. And they may well have, you know, so that a very senior member of the marketing team of a large company may be dedicated to the marketing, to the event marketing process. So this would be sort of best practice, but it only really works in a very large company that's participating in a lot of events. They would make sure that the event marketing activity aligns with the overall marketing activity of the company. And again, it seems extraordinarily basic that that should be the case, but in many cases, frankly, isn't. You know, many companies participate in, I think a lot of companies participate in trade fairs because they always have. There is every year in Mumbai, in Cologne, in Las Vegas, wherever it might be, there is every year an event for my industry. And I've been going there for the last 20 years. And if it's a family company, my father used to go for the 20 years before that as well. So we've always had a booth, and we don't really want to think about going somewhere else. That's where we go. So that's great for the exhibition organizers. There really is a sort of stickiness for events. And if they're considered to be in an industry a good event, you can be quite nervous about whether you're missing out by not going. You mentioned earlier one of the challenges in the decision-making process of who you invite to come to an event is that all your competitors will be there. So if I invite one of my best customers, he or she is then going to wander around the exhibition hall and be exposed to all of the marvelous things that my competitors are doing. And I'm not sure I like that. But if you're not there at all, I think that the answer to that question, which you asked, of course, is that you may invite those people to come to the fair. They may happily take the invitation that you send them, but they probably would come anyway. So is the answer, do I not? I mean, so they would, if you've sent them an invitation or you've specifically said, please do come and see us at the booth. We've got some really interesting things to show you this year, you know, the new, whatever it is that our company makes or does. You've got a decent chance they will at least come and see you. If you're not there, you've got a 100% chance that they won't come and see you. So there is quite a big fear of missing out when it comes to the more successful trade fairs. So people will sign up often for that reason. But then whether they, as I said earlier, whether they join all of the dots for their participation effectively is a whole another issue.
True. To wrap up this conversation today, Paul, how do you think a proper ROI estimation can be made from the point of view of the exhibitor? Because end of the day, exhibitions sort of talk of how many visitors came in and how many booths were there and how much time was spent and how big the conference was and what was the lineup of speakers and so on to show that the show is great. But from the exhibitor's point of view, what do you think people are looking at when they're looking at ROI? I understand the two extremes, like the gift fair where they're actually looking at the order book, and the air show where it's more about whom you could smooth with and or the marketing brand building presence bit. But when you look at the bulk of the B2B, business to business primarily, business to business trade shows, what do you think are exhibitors looking at from the ROI perspective?
I mean, that's a very good question, and probably worthy of a podcast in its own right. But and is is a topic of a good deal of discussion. And you're absolutely right. From the simplest, in a few instances, there are very simple answers to that question. I mean, I alluded earlier to a September jewelry fair in Hong Kong. That is the simplest of all of them. There are no sales taxes or customs duties in Hong Kong. An exhibitor going to the jewelry fair in Hong Kong in September can sell stuff from the booth. So I can arrive with an empty briefcase or a briefcase full of cash. This is all entirely legal in Hong Kong, and say, yes, I am going to buy a briefcase full of that and I'm going to take it home. And the at the most basic level, the exhibitor says, yes, I spent $20,000 on my presence at this exhibition and I walked away with $100,000. Result, very good. Sadly, you know, both for the exhibitors and for the event organizers, it's rarely that simple. As you rightly alluded to there, the exhibition organizers tend to have a fairly crude approach to telling people how marvelous their fairs were, and it's usually a bulk number, which very frequently is not true, of the number of people who came to the booth. And they'll sort of walk up, you know, the sales process in many cases is a very old-fashioned one. They'll walk up to you, sling an arm around the shoulder and say, 50,000 people, that's 10% more than last year, isn't that marvelous? You know perfectly well, even if you had the most successful event that there possibly was, your team on the exhibition booth could not possibly have spoken to 50,000 people. So it's neither here nor there, really. I mean, the question is, you know, were they the right people and did we see the right people? I mean, I'm not sure I have a good answer to that question, although it's something probably worth scratching away at a later stage in terms of...
Sure.
I mean,
sure, we should.
It is a topic which gets a lot of discussion. I don't think anybody has quite the right answers to it. Numbers of leads is a very sort of crude metric that may or may, and again, you know, I mean, you may well have seen it, and your viewers may well have seen this, where it shows a company has employed a bunch of attractive young people who keep leaping out into the aisle, either giving people a giveaway or just leaping into the aisle and scanning badges because they're somehow being incentivized to collect as many names as they can. I mean, very nice. I mean, you walk away with 2,000 new names to put into your database, but whether those people have any interest in your product, who knows? So purely numbers of leads maybe is a bit too crude. Some of the smart badge systems work quite well in the basis that only people who walk onto your booth and sort of say, yes, please send me more information. And you say, well, just scan your badge there and that will automatically generate information to come to you. That works pretty well because by walking onto a booth asking for information, I have automatically qualified myself as a potentially serious customer. I think it was a point that you alluded to earlier. You know, how do you identify somebody with any level of genuine intent to actually do business rather than somebody who just likes coming to the show and seeing their friends and actually would never spend a penny on any of the stuff that's on the booths? So there are ways of fine-tuning that so that you are looking at people who have specifically requested information or specifically expressed an interest in your product rather than just wandered by. There are all sorts of efforts and ways to try to measure the impact of the event over a longer period of time. I mean, as we've said, very, very few cases are you going to walk away with 20 new sales that happened at the fair. And but if your objective in going to the fair, and I guess actually that's one of the questions that has to be asked, which often is not, why are you here? You know, what's the specific object, not because the managing director told me to come, but what are your company's objectives for being at this event? And if, for example, your objective is we would like to see a substantial uptick in our business in Malaysia in the next 12 to 24 months, you know, maybe you have to wait 12 to 24 months to see if indeed your business in Malaysia has picked up. Although, of course, you get into complications there. It's quite hard to if a corporate objective is build up our business in Malaysia, you're probably also deploying more salespeople. You're probably directing some digital marketing in Bahasa Malay into the market. You're doing those sorts of things. So the quite hard to tease out then whether the fact that your sales team was standing on an exhibition booth for a week was the reason for the fact that your sales have increased by 30% in Malaysia this year. So it's a complicated question, but an important one. There are large companies, and some of the bigger companies work with event marketing agencies, sort of the equivalent of advertising agencies, but which are focused entirely on events. Those companies tend to have developed quite sophisticated toolboxes of ways of measuring the investment in cash, the investment in time. Investment in time is not an insignificant issue. You are normally, both as an exhibitor and a visitor, taking a part of your sales team, your marketing team, whoever it is coming to the event, out of the office, out of the work from home, out of wherever they do their normal daily business, their normal interactions with your customers. You've taken them out of that probably for a week. By the time they've got there, they've stood on the booth for 3 or 4 days and they've gone back home again. So that's not an insignificant investment in time of your staff. So people are looking at measuring the money they spend, the time they invest, and trying to come up with, and to say the event marketing agencies, and that might be, well, an interesting avenue for you to explore in terms of the most sophisticated end of the companies, talking to those sort of event marketing agencies about how they're doing that measurement and the sort of tools they're deploying, because there are tools. The truth is 90% of exhibiting companies are not using them, but there are tools and there are ways of doing that.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com. Wonderful. And as you suggested, I would come back to you on the trade show ROI bit and do a more in-depth discussion about the tools that are being deployed and ways to measure trade show ROI, because I think that's critical, because I think on that, in the kind of economic environment we are in, it is critical that we talk of ROI openly and try to figure out ways to measure that so that it justifies what it can do, and it can do
absolutely
a lot, like we both
absolutely
know. Paul, thank you so much for joining. And I'm delighted that we started this show with you, and we'll be in touch and talk again
soon.
Very
good. Thank you very much. Very nice to see you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a BizCast original podcast and is produced for PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.